The business icon would not have existed beyond early 1990s if it wasn't for the Rothschild banking interests, who have a lot of affiliations to people in sort of the Epstein network, and specifically Epstein's financial crimes, which include a lot of currency speculation. And if for anyone that's familiar, the Rothschild family has a very long and storied history with Zionism and the establishment of the State of Israel and being a major patron of that. So, you know, they've definitely had a lot of influence, I would think, over Trump now, since he owes them a lot.
Let's talk about Trump and Epstein.
Sure. Trump, his mentor, is a big focus of my book. Roy Cohn was a mob lawyer and had ties to this network that I just mentioned, pretty direct ties that I talk about in my book. And Roy Cohn was also involved in sex blackmail stuff, that a ring that allegedly blackmailed J. Edgar Hoover, among others, and prevented him from going after organized crime in the United States. And Roy Cohn was also Donald Trump's lawyer while also representing some of these mob bosses and other things. But aside from that, you know, Trump in the late 80s got involved with this company called Resorts International. He became the controlling shareholder of it, I think, in 1987. And that was a pretty notorious CIA mob front company that was involved in all this really shady stuff in the Caribbean involving Mayor Lansky specifically. Trump took a controlling stake in it for the purpose of expanding his hotel and casino holdings, specifically in Atlantic City. During this period of time, he's hanging out on Robert Maxwell's yacht, for example, photographed with people like Steve Ross of Time Warner fame, who was linked to organized crime, Maxwell, the former Senator John Tower, who was an accessory with Robert Maxwell of the Promise Software scandal, which again was U.S.-Israeli collaboration in committing crime, basically. He, you know, allegedly became close to Ghislaine in this period, and also to Epstein, reportedly frequently partying with Epstein and Tom Barrack of Colony Capital, who's in the administration now, I believe, as ambassador to Turkey or something like that. And, they were, you know, international playboys together, and Epstein in this period also, or sorry, Trump in this period had also become close reportedly to John Casablancas of Elite Model Management, who is known for his preference of quote unquote child women, and his modeling agencies have a lot of scandalous accusations about trafficking and other things to figures like Adnan Khashoggi in the 80s, who was one of Epstein's clients in the 80s as well. So a lot of these guys are swimming in kind of disturbing waters of question of dubious legality, to put it lightly. And then in the early 90s, Trump's Atlantic City holdings and other things drag down his business empire, and he declares bankruptcy. And in order to be bailed out, he's bailed out by Wilbur Ross, who he later rewards for that when he's president the first time, making him commerce secretary. But at the time, Wilbur Ross was representing the Rothschild banking interests. And the Rothschild banking interests, specifically this Wall Street M&A arm that they opened up in the 80s, was responsible for bringing Robert Maxwell to New York. So basically, you know, Trump as a business icon would not have existed beyond the early 1990s if it wasn't for the Rothschild banking interests, who have a lot of affiliations to people in sort of the Epstein network, and specifically Epstein's financial crimes, which include a lot of currency speculation. And this, what the New York Times once called a currency speculation cabal, including people like Jamie Goldsmith, also backed by the Rothschilds, and even George Soros, whose first, his quantum fund in like the late 60s was bankrolled by the French Rothschild interests. And if for anyone that's familiar, the Rothschild family has a very long and storied history with Zionism and the establishment of the State of Israel and being a major patron of that. So, you know, they've definitely had a lot of influence, I would think, over Trump now, since he owes them a lot. And also, you know, the Epstein friendship, you know, beyond that period of time, you know, persisted and continued up until the early 2000s, when they had a falling out. And there's a lot of conflicting reports about what that falling out was about. But ultimately, it seems to have been over this real estate deal. They both were competing for the same Palm Beach mansion, and neither of them got it. But apparently their fight over that sort of led them to end their, you know, multi-decade friendship at that point. And Epstein, for example, claims that he introduced Trump to Melania. But of course, Trump and Melania deny that and say it was another mogul guy, sort of a protege of John Casablancas of Elite Models, named Paolo Zampoli. There's a lot to say on him, but I'll leave that for another time. But, you know, the ties are extensive, and maybe not as extensive or as damaging in some respects as some people would like them to be, but he's certainly not absolved of involvement. I would also say that in the case of the Black Book, which a lot of people are familiar with. It's this rather infamous book of contacts of Epstein. It was originally produced by Epstein's former butler or house manager in Palm Beach named Alfredo Rodriguez. And Rodriguez was shopping it around to people suing Epstein in civil suits. And he basically circled a series of names that he said were essential to solving the crimes that Epstein was up to, and that these were, you know, represented essentially accomplices of that crime. And so Donald Trump's name is one of the circled names, along with Ghislaine Maxwell, Jean-Luc Brunel, Leslie Wexner, and some of the names that are probably more familiar to people that have more superficially looked into this case. Also, a very close friend of Trump's is circled. His name is Flavio Briatore. He's an Italian guy, a businessman. I wrote about him recently in a pretty deep dive.
Did he have a baby with Heidi Klum?
Yes.
Okay. That's how I know that name.
Yes, and he introduced Naomi Campbell to Epstein. Okay. And of course, Prince Andrew and Ghislaine Maxwell were fixtures for several years at Heidi Klum's Halloween party. Mm-hmm. There's pictures, all over the internet of that. And also, you know, Heidi Klum and Campbell, among others, were prominent Victoria's Secret models in their annually televised fashion shows, which reportedly Epstein had, you know, a role in organizing. And there's pictures of him being in the front row with Wexner and plenty of, documented evidence of him claiming to be a model scout or one of the top people in modeling for Victoria's Secret and using that as a lure to, entrap women, among other things.
I mean, it just seems at this point that there's no denying that Trump, they must have something on Trump. I mean, how is this?
Well, at this point, the waters have been so muddied that there's always going to be a segment of his base that doesn't believe anything, no matter what comes out. He'll just say it's a hoax or say that, you know, it was planted in there by James Comey or whatever. I mean, it's hard to really, the narrative management is in full swing. But I think you can look at the available evidence, like the things that I just laid out. And I'm sure I've forgotten something. I mean, it is kind of a long timeline and a lot of details to keep in one's head. And, I have a 2-month-old at home, so. I'm not at 100% right now, I guess.
Well, and just also his behavior right now.
It's enough to question.
Yeah.
Well, and very clearly, the people behind Epstein and the people behind Trump, there is a considerable bit of overlap, as I laid out earlier, because Epstein at the end of the day wasn't the mastermind of whatever scheme he was running. He was working for other people. Mm-hmm. Most obviously, Leslie Wexner, but arguably a lot of these other billionaires, most of which have ties to Israel, but a lot of them also have ties to this transnational Jewish fraternal organization that sort of, models itself after Freemasonry called B'nai B'rith. Roy Cohn was a significant part of that. His father used to run the New York branch. Edgar Bronfman and Wexner and a lot of these prominent figures in the mega group have donated to it or been on its board of overseers. And it's the organization that produced the Anti-Defamation League or the ADL that goes around sort of conflating criticisms of billionaires like this with anti-Semitism. And also anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, among other things. So important to point that out, I guess, because, if I'm talking about and criticizing Leslie Wexner, who was, accused by the Columbus Police Department of having ties to organized crime, and I go and I report that they said that, that's not anti-Semitic. I just want to point out that this guy was a criminal. Mm-hmm. And to conflate as Leslie Wexner with all Jews is absolutely insane. There's plenty of Jews that are very against the Epstein network. I think that's quite clear. And also, there's Jews being arrested for protesting about what Israel is doing in Gaza. It's frankly pretty dishonest. But if you want to keep the heat off of the real people that were managing this, one way you would do that would be to attempt to criminalize, scrutiny of these very prominent billionaires who masquerade as philanthropists. But really, they're a lot more than that. There are a lot of things going on right now. But I would say, the thesis of my book and my work on Epstein is basically, and the reason I go so far back in time, I basically argue that organized crime, a specific syndicate of organized crime, so the Jewish mob, the aspect of that led by Mayor Lansky, teamed up with Lucky Luciano of the Italian mafia in New York, and later he's deported, and in the Sicilian mafia in Italy. They teamed up with U.S. intelligence and also British intelligence, which were collaborating collaborating together during World War II. And basically in this alliance, which happened during something called Operation Underworld, which U.S. intelligence has since admitted happened, but they denied it for a long time. You know, after that initial alliance in World War II, it didn't end because it was justified out of wartime necessity, right? And after the war ends, they keep doing it. And so basically what happened there is that you had organized crime get in bed with intelligence, and they basically made a cartel with state protection. This, of course, precedes the creation of the State of Israel, which is in 1948. And a lot of those Jewish mobsters that had teamed up with intelligence sent weapons and arms and other things to the Haganah and these Israeli paramilitary or these Jewish paramilitary groups that later created the State of Israel and induced the Nakba, the mass exodus of Palestinians by force and terror, frankly, in 1948. And so, you know, since then, a lot of those people in these networks have sort of swam in the same sea. And that's why a lot of the scandals in the past of, you know, for U.S. intelligence, like Iran-Contra, for example, involved U.S. and Israeli intelligence working together. There's a reason why there's a monument to James Angleton, one of the first CIA counterintelligence chiefs in Tel Aviv. It's because they've been collaborating nonstop, but really I would call it a criminal organization, because the CIA and also some of their equivalents in Israel took upon it a lot of the cartels that had previously been, or illicit markets that had previously been the business of the mob exclusively, like the drug trade or arms trafficking. And that's why, you know, you see all of that in Iran-Contra and similar scandals in the past. And so also they engage in human trafficking, in sex trafficking, but blackmail, which was originally born out of organized crime, but it's very useful to intelligence agencies too, because intelligence is just information that gives you an advantage. So ultimately, blackmail is that too.